This is Deanne Penn at the United Nations. The UN Humanitarian Coordinator in Ukraine believes the grinding four-year conflict in the East is being forgotten, with thousands of ceasefire violations being recorded each month. Neil Walker, who's also the UN Development Programme, or UNDP's representative, said in an interview with UN News that he was doing all he could to raise awareness and secure vital funding to keep aid flowing to thousands of displaced civilians. Russian-backed separatists have been fighting Ukrainian government forces since 2014, and millions are being exposed to heightened danger due to landmines and food and power shortages. Nargiz Shekinskaya asked Mr. Walker for the latest on how fighting was affecting mains water supplies across eastern Ukraine.
Yeah, we are deeply concerned by the continued shelling of water infrastructure in eastern Ukraine. And yes, there was damage to the pumping station, and in fact, even worse, we had a number of injuries of the workers, and right now water service is suspended. We are working with partners, including the OSCE and others, to negotiate security for the workers so that they can get back in and put the system back into operation. We would use this opportunity to again call on all parties to the conflict to avoid shelling of civilian areas, of civilian infrastructure.
Some people call this conflict a forgotten conflict. Do you agree with that? If yes, why do you think it's been forgotten? What is the reason for that?
Yeah, it in my view, it is forgotten. It's incredible how many people are shocked to learn that over the course of last year, there were 40,000 violations of the ceasefire on average every single month throughout the year. And we continue to see thousands and thousands of violations of the ceasefire. There were a slight dip. There was a slight improvement in that situation. But in the month of April, again, the violations are rising. Why is it forgotten? You know, I wish I could answer that. What we're trying to do about it is deliberately we are marching around the world, and we are bringing this issue to people's attention. And I thank you for your interest, and I thank you for the opportunity to talk about it, because fundamentally, when we do put the issues forward, we find that it makes a difference. So we're hopeful that this visit, we were in Brussels, we were in Geneva, we will go to Washington. We hope that through these visits, we will generate much greater awareness and support for Ukrainian people in the East. In fact, in Brussels, the ECHO commissioner announced an additional 24 million euros for the work that we're doing, and we hope we can replicate that as we move forward, because as we don't get the funding, we lose our capacity. As we lose our capacity, we cannot deliver as much. We ask for less money as a result, and then we get less money, and then our capacity continually gets diminished. And it would be very difficult for us to recreate that capacity if, in fact, our funding were to dry up.
I wanted to ask you about the funding. UN asked for 187 million. How much have been received so far, and do you hope to get the rest?
Well, the actual amount we've received so far is only 3% on the record. We know that it's actually a little bit higher than that because there are some pledges that haven't been delivered. But frankly speaking, this is not acceptable. This is the total amount we're asking for is less than 1% of the money asked globally for humanitarian response. We have an ongoing conflict in the heart of Eurasia, and we need this support.
There have been reports that Ukraine is rapidly becoming, and I quote, one of the most mined areas in the world. I think last time we heard this in December. Is this problem being addressed, and does UN take part in these efforts?
Yeah, currently Ukraine has the highest casualty rates associated with anti-vehicle mines. It's third or fourth most mined in the world. This is a combination of mines as well as the problem of unexploded ordnance, and it's a huge problem. We are, in fact, trying to take action. It has not been easy. It is a situation of ongoing conflict. There is a 460-kilometer contact line, which is heavily mined. It makes it difficult for people to move through. They cannot get off the five checkpoint roads. If they wander off the roads, they're in danger of getting hit by mines. We are taking some actions. I would like to tell you that I'm satisfied with these actions. The truth is I'm not. We need more support from the government. We need more support from the de facto authorities. We need more recognition that humanitarian mine action is a top priority.
What about the checkpoints contact line? We keep hearing that people are waiting for hours to cross it, and you know, a million people cross it every month. So is this issue being addressed somehow? And do you think there will be more checkpoints, or maybe the procedure will be somehow accelerated?
This is a question that it seems like the never-ending story, so to speak. There's been different moments in time when one side would say, yes, let's open another checkpoint, and then the other side says, okay, and then there's a different perspective on the other side, and we've not been able to move in the almost 4 years that I'm in Ukraine. We've had the same five checkpoints. It's not really enough, and the conditions are not ideal. There have been some improvements at the checkpoints, but they're not enough to allow what we would call real freedom of movement.
Do UN personnel currently have access to territories not controlled by the government?
Yes, we've been in these areas since the onset of the conflict. We're not satisfied with the access, but we have access. Mm-hmm. We are working, dealing with what we call the de facto authorities. They know who we are. They know how we work. We have been impartial from the beginning, and we are able to deliver humanitarian assistance. That said, we are not able to deliver the volume of assistance that we need. We are not formally registered. We work on a kind of a day-to-day limited agreement with the de facto authorities in order to deliver specific kinds of assistance. We have been struggling to get a better agreement with these de facto authorities so that we would be able to scale up, we would be able to plan our pipeline of assistance, we would be able to put the right people in place, and this would enable us to reach many, many more people. But the message I would like to leave is that even with those constraints, we have never stopped working.